are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
This is Beth, wellness expert, along with Dr. Scott Clitheroe, or as I like to refer him as Superman or the greatest multitasker I know. But either way, Dr. Taskmaster or superhero, Scott, how are you doing today?
Oh, Beth, you're so nice. I'm great. Thank you for the kind words. I'm doing really well. It's another beautiful day here in Austin, Texas. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I know. I'm so excited about this warmer weather.
Yes, yes. We had snow 2 weeks ago, and today it's up in the 50s and 60s, so I'll take it every day. I love the warm weather.
Well, I know we both love to chit-chat, but I am really excited about our special guest today.
Well, I want to hear all about it. I know, but let's let the listeners hear all about him. I can't wait.
Okay, everyone, you are in for a treat today. I want to welcome Dr. Ronald Cole. Dr. Cole is not only a physician, but an author of 4 books. He's an enlightened birth advocate and a leading pioneer of spirituality in the field of pregnancy, pain, as well as healing. So there is something for everyone to hear, not just mothers-to-be. But what is even more fascinating is that Dr. Cole came to this role in the field as an OBGYN through his own spiritual journey, which we will talk about in depth later on. But his awakening and spiritual journey led to his interest as a birth advocate for pregnant mothers. As he pursued his personal interest in the study of all the spiritual aspects of life and their practical applications, he began to open his mind to developing a more loving approach to healing, to life, and living a new life. He has so generously agreed to share his story of the connection between body, mind, and soul, as well as his approach to his practice. So welcome, Dr. Cole, to A Healthier View.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on the show, and appreciate you having me.
Dr. Cole, we have so much to talk about. I just can't wait to hear some of your expertise, but I got to know a little bit more about your background. You know, I know that you were actually an engineer before you went into medicine, and I'm just so interested in life paths and journeys and career choices. And so could you just give us a kind of an idea of how you made that switch from engineer to physician?
Well, I don't recommend my path because it was rather lengthy. I originally wanted to be a physician back when I was in high school, but at that time doctors were 10 feet tall and walked on water, and I was thought, who am I to think I could become a doctor? So I forgot about that. I was good in math and science, so engineering was a big thing, and I went into engineering and picked civil engineering, which is about the only one I think I would enjoy, and I excelled in it and did well, and proceeded on to get both a BS and a master's degree at the University of Missouri, and then went into practice for as an engineer for about a year, and then I had to go to the military because of an ROTC commitment and served 2 years of active duty, and then came back to that. Well, as I was doing strict civil engineering work, I was okay, but I went to work with the Exxon Chemical Company, and it wasn't too long before they started moving me around, and I got really kind of unhappy and was not liking the type of work and thought, this is not for me. And I looked around at other civil engineering jobs and really couldn't find any. Well, at this time, about this time, we had my second child, and he was born with a birth defect called spina bifida. And that he had about 29 surgeries in 3 years. So obviously I was thrown into deep contact with the medical profession. That rekindled the interest in medicine. And I thought, okay, what do I do now? You know, And I thought, okay, I will take some courses to get my pre-requirements, and spent about 2 years doing that, and then actually was able to get into the University of Missouri Medical School back where I originally went to school the first try around. So I did 4 years of medical school, and then I moved back to the Houston area, and I know you're a Texas person, and did my residency at MD Anderson and St. Joseph Hospital. And I came out of residency as a traditional obstetrician gynecologist, which means when you're doing even like vaginal deliveries and stuff, it was a very sterile, impersonal, no family around type experience. And that's the way I was trained, so that's the way I did it, as you well know. And and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but then I had started on somewhat of a spiritual quest through reading some books and more, and we can get into that detail later on, but I realized spirituality, which is based on unconditional love, the type of delivery that we were doing was a very impersonal, sterile, not a good way to enter the world and in a loving way. And so I started, based on my study in spirituality, looking at ways on how I can make a better birth experience. And I started making those changes. But anyway, that's how I kind of made the transition. I've had many, many people say, how in the world did you get from a civil engineer with a master's degree into an obstetrician gynecologist? And that's just kind of in a nutshell how the transition was made.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, as you both know, and as our regular listeners know, you know, for the past 4 or 5 years, I have really gotten into holistic and spiritual health. And that is something I am really passionate about and always wanting to learn more about. But what I find interesting is that when I first visited my functional medicine doctor, she asked me if I knew what my birth was like. And I remember thinking, not for sure. I guess it was pretty normal. And then you, Dr. Cole, asked me the same question when we first spoke. So can you go into detail why the birth experience is such an important event for the baby as he or she comes into the life?
Well, I think it gets into the point that you switch kind of over to the spirituality aspect. In other words, we look at this baby, and it is indeed, has baby traits, so to speak. You know, it's not talking, and we think that there's nothing going on in its mind. Well, really, it has a soul just like you and I. My beliefs, and I've studied it for many, many years, is that soul has been around for a long, long time. So it's kind of mostly of them are old souls trapped in a baby's body, but they've kind of gone through a veil of forgetfulness and they don't realize that. But yet, if you've been in my shoes, you've heard so many examples of how babies account things that happened while they were in the uterus and everything. And so it's like anything else. If you went to a foreign country and they threw you in a room with bright lights and questioned you and interrogated you and then finally let you out, you wouldn't have a real great thought of this place is such a wonderful, loving place to be. And so it's the same way, and it really gets into a lot of details we won't get into here. I know it's not the purpose right now, but babies are affected by their parents during pregnancy. They actually choose their parents, and parents accept them. This is all on a higher level that you don't remember, typically. So love is the ultimate emotion, unconditional love specifically, and it just makes a great difference. Do you want to be kind of rough handled, or do you want to be handled in a very unconditional, loving way? I think we know how most people would answer that question. So that's the importance of creating a birth experience, which involves the family, which involves calmness, which involves love. And so that's why the birth, the atmosphere that you set is so important to the child. Example, I've done, you know, when my son was born, he had spina bifida. And one of the things that, I got involved with was I was one of the co-founders of the Spina Bifida Association of America. But I had a lot of the contact with the medical profession, and it's just the love that you can create, and the one way, the one reason that we can somewhat get by with that in obstetrics, when I started changing the experience, and what kind of did I do? Well, during a vaginal delivery, I would dim lights, play soothing music. We would talk to the unborn child, reassure it. We'd let family in, and we would let the dad cut the cord, and we didn't whisk baby off like they used to do it seconds after it was born into the nursery, and oh, the baby has to stay in the nursery for X hours or till tomorrow morning or whatever. And so stop, you can just with logic, you can say, well, what kind of experience would I like? So that starts your whole life off in the right direction, Beth. So does that help out some?
Oh, absolutely. Beautifully put.
That, you know, I feel like, Doc, that we could just do a better job in medicine, that, you know, and we're going to get into your book, but it just impacted me so much that, you know, just something as ancient as a birth has been somewhat sterilized, if that's the right word, you know, and that people, you know, innovators like you are kind of bringing it back to the way it used to be. And I know in Austin here, there's quite a few midwives, and I hear great things about what they do. And yet then I also hear some grumbling about it. And I'm imagining you had some pushback as you were innovating the birth experience from some of your colleagues. And, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about it too much, but to me, that's very interesting. That must have been somewhat difficult for you.
Well, you have to remember what I'm talking about. And when I made this conversion, because I'd been in practice for a number of years and doing the, as you said, sterilized approach, and that's a good word to use, and a good description. When you step out of the box, as you can well appreciate in medicine, you're not a well thought of from the medical profession. Yeah. Maybe the patient's fine. And so at one time, I could not get a pediatrician to take care of my newborn babies, and which, as you know, you have to have a pediatrician assigned to the newborn baby and all that. So I had to figure out ways to do that. Then particularly if you really want to step out of the box, and as I did, I started doing some underwater births in the hospital. Well, of course, I would have to assure my patients, now, if I'm not here, you won't have one, I promise you. And I felt that the buzzards were circling every time I did one, waiting for something to go wrong so they could swoop in and pick the bones. If for me to do, and you understand this, Dr. Clitheroe, that if you want to do something in a hospital, you have to, as we talked to the administrator, she said, okay, if you get approval, if you write a protocol and get approval for it by the executive committee and the OB-GYN committee, then you can do it. So I had to do all of that, and believe it or not, did, you know, which is surprising in and of itself. And the first water birth that we did was the couple that encouraged me to do it. I have to be honest with you. When they first said, we want a water birth, I said, you're crazy, we're not going to do that. You know. Aww. So I'm totally honest with what I had to wade through some pretty heavy swamps to get where I was. But actually, I've created three birthing videos years ago, vaginal delivery, cesarean delivery, and water birth. And one of the births in there was the first one we did. And the neat thing about it, it was a very loving couple that talked to the child, and the babies in water births They don't cry, they don't whine, they're perfectly fine. It's a totally different personality that you see because you've approached it from a loving standpoint. So it was quite a challenge to get to, and it took, I don't know, maybe a few years before they got off my back and left me alone to do what I was doing and everything. So it was a challenge. I don't recommend it for everybody by any means. You have to be and feel very strongly that you're doing the right thing. And mm-hmm. you talk about healing. It's the same thing in healing and everything. So mm-hmm. I agree with what you said. We have a tremendous amount to learn about healing, and we'll get into that later, I know, but it's a real challenge. We don't really understand healing at this point in time, and that's the reason for this last book that I wrote, but the medical profession has a lot to learn. One important thing I always told people when I gave talks and everything is that, yes, I'm doing things different, but number one thing, I always follow accepted medical standards. You have to do that, as you well know, or you're not going to be in medicine very long. The reason mm-hmm. I could kind of, quote, get away with it is because most, particularly obstetrical as well as gynecological patients, are normal, natural, healthy people, and mm-hmm. it's not treating cancer and just going way out and some other field of treatment for that, you know. So they've been doing birthing without doctors around, as you pointed out, since man started walking this earth. Mm-hmm. So,
That's true. Really interesting. Now, can you go into and explain what a water birth experience would look like? I mean, I have this image of a big pool, and I want to know, are there any women out there that should not do a water birth?
Oh, absolutely. I always told them, now look, okay, we'll plan this birth, but at any time, if I see that there is a problem and I don't feel comfortable with fetal heart tones or bleeding or whatever complication, you will not have an underwater birth. You just don't blindly say, well, I don't care, we're going to have a water birth no matter what. And I did have to call several off at times because of either abnormal fetal heart tones normally or something like that. So basically the first couple that I had, they went out and bought, found a tub, and it was just a huge, about a 6 or 8 foot tub that you would use on a ranch to put water in for your cattle. Okay. And so worked well. And you would fill it up, and we would labor the patient in. I was changed to a different hospital. I changed to a different hospital, and I agreed to it if they put in LDR rooms. And this is before there was any such things. And we put in whirlpool tubs so the mother could labor in. So it's not only that you deliver in the water, you labor in the water. And as Dr. Clitheroe knows, warm water creates endorphins and things. And, if you have the right patient, she's really in control of her labor and preparing for it. And that was my key, is preparation, education, and positive attitudes. So we would labor them in the whirlpool bath, and we had a dop tone. We could check underwater to listen to the heartbeat. And so when the lady was complete and ready to push, we would move her to the tub, which we had at a given temperature, and would finish delivering there. Dad would be in with her. He quite often would be leaning up against the side of the tub. She would be then in front of him, and I would lean over and examine the patient, and then when it's time to deliver the baby. And so theory says you could probably leave a baby underwater for 10 minutes after it was born, which nobody in their right mind would do, because where has the baby been for 9 months?
So true
to that, and they don't, unless they're exposed to air, they don't try to breathe. And if the cord is still pulsing, they're getting their oxygen from mother still. And, so it's, it's just such a beautiful experience and everything. If you have loving parents and they've done their homework, and then, you know, when the baby's delivered, it's given to mom or dad, and they're staying in the tub and everything until we get the placenta delivered, and then we get them in the bed and the baby stays with the parent. So it's a totally different experience, to say the least. So, and I've had some great experiences, and the two births that are shown on the underwater birthing tape that I did was that couple, and then the other one was actually a doctor and his wife that had that were very loving patients and stuff. So it was it really shows a beautiful experience.
Dr. Cole, you know, I marked up your book quite a bit, and you know, listening to you talk about the birthing experience, I know that you mentioned the word evolution and evolve a lot in your book about, you know, universal spiritual law of love and how maybe someday we'll evolve and understand these laws better. But I think about it also just in the terms, again, of medicine, that, you know, the way healthcare, at least in this country, is it's just not, we as healthcare professionals are not often reimbursed or rewarded for spending time with the patient. And I know personally that the more time I spend with a patient in the room, the less they have as far as pain, the more questions they have answered, the more satisfaction they have from the visit. And yet, of course, I'm not reimbursed that way. And you know, I just think that word evolution meant a lot to me. And have, you know, have you felt, do you see healthcare evolving yet and following along some of these pathways that you've kind of been a trailblazer in? How are you seeing it as you kind of wind down your active medical career? How do you feel things are going?
Well, certainly I've been retired now for about 10 years, so and mm-hmm. spending time with writing, but it certainly is not a speedy evolvement by any means. You know, just yeah. mentioned, we at least have gotten into LDR rooms and underwater births and things like that. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, we have to talk about the healing part too. I have very strong feelings that what we're taught in medical school and residency, I think, is the mechanics of healing. And I think this is a good way to look at it. But the real cause of healing comes from within the patient. If the patient's not willing to be healed, and I know a lot of people would take, option that I don't really believe that. But indeed, if you've studied spirituality for 50 years like I have, and if you've put it to work in your practice, and I can give an example or two if you'd like me to, but it's the patient that is the bottom line. And you might say, well, nobody would get sick for the heck of it. No, there is a benefit to the sick role, as you well yeah. know, and I've heard, I know you mm-hmm. had talked about it. You know, well, what's the advantage of being sick? Well, you don't have to do anything for yourself. Everybody waits on you. They bring over food. They feel sorry for you. Oh, poor old lady, et cetera. And, but it goes so much deeper. Like I say, I have over 500 audio tapes of original spiritual research and have worked with both the unborn and newborn child and about every example you can think of problems that will happen in life and particularly healing. And it starts making sense once you're given examples of that. And I know we don't have time mm-hmm. to go into it, but still, if you'd like me to, I can give you an example of one healing situation that I cured a lady of severe pelvic pain that lasted for weeks with a rather unique medical approach that I probably would have been thrown out of medicine if it had come to the board or something here.
Is that the one you talked about in the foreword of your book? Is that you? I know that one in the beginning of your book, you talked about that woman who came to your office with chronic pain. That was fascinating. I'd like you to
right.
give us a short version of that. Again, it's in the book, but I think it's very educational and informative.
And it was extremely educational to me. This was a young lady that came to me and said, look, I have severe pain each time I have intercourse. And I went to Dr. So-and-so, who was a GP there. He was kind of a gruff, older GP and doesn't spend any time with his patients. And you're right, you don't really get paid to do what we really need to do, unfortunately, here. But anyway, and so I started getting some insights to her, and I started talking to her and getting a history. Well, the physician had told her kind of roughly and everything, well, you have a yeast infection and you've got a venereal disease called herpes. Well, that was back when herpes was a real no-no. And if you had herpes, you were a horrible, terrible person that slept with everyone and all that stuff. And so obviously that was a great guilt trip he was able to put on her. And so he sent her home without doing anything really much, maybe treating her yeast infection. But it didn't change or anything. And she kept thinking, oh, I'm a terrible person. And this came out in talking to her. And so I started getting insight that guilt was the cause of her pain, you know, not some endometriosis or adhesions or anything. And so after talking to her, I spent quite a bit of time educating her, look, herpes is not the end of the world. It doesn't mean you've been slept with everybody in the world. You may have gotten it 10 years ago and it just started affecting you. And so I could see her kind of growing from just a few inches tall, so to speak, to kind of straightening up and feeling better about herself. And I said, okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go home. On your way home, I want you to stop and buy your favorite bottle of wine, and you go home and you seduce your husband. Now, I don't remember reading about that in medical school, and I don't think you did either.
No.
So she went home, and I went on about my business. Well, about a month later, I thought, I wonder what happened to her. You know, I haven't heard anything, you know. So I told my office manager, call her up, tell her to come in. I just want to talk to her. I won't charge her for the visit. And she did that, and the lady came in. I said, well, I asked her two questions of most importance. I said, well, how you been doing? Fine, fine. I said, well, how's your love life? She said, it couldn't be better. And So I thought, whoa, I can't believe I did that. Well, that wasn't true. I didn't do anything except talk to her. She did the healing, not me. So you see here, we have severe pain that lasted for weeks after intercourse that could be healed by understanding and learning and changing your self-image. So, and there's many examples of that I've seen.
Yeah.
And again, I love that story. It's in the book. And, you know, originally I was going to ask you about exercise in the unborn baby, but I have changed my mind. I want to know, you told us how you went from being an engineer to being a medical doctor, but I want to know, where did this spirituality, when did it start for you? When did you realize there was something bigger and better and something out there? Because I certainly know this is going to be a new train of thought for a lot of people out there. When did this journey for you begin?
The journey for me began, back when I was an engineer. And I read some books that talked about some very highly spiritually evolved people and entities and stuff like that. And that kind of got me interested, and I opened myself to opportunities and thinking about reading more about it. Back about 1967, I learned about a group called Rosicrucians, which was founded in ancient Egypt. It's out in San Jose, California. And they were somewhat of a spiritual, insightful mind over matter association. I went to one of their conventions. It was very fascinating and enlightening. And then later I went to what was called a Starseed Seminar in Missouri by Ken Carey. This was back in 85. And I was exposed to a technique called spiritual channeling. And what that is, and I found it very enlightening and fascinating source of wisdom and truth. And channeling is actually when a very gifted, evolved medium, and there's all kinds of calibers of mediums, allows a highly evolved spiritual entity to speak through them. And when you open yourself up, what you need will be brought to you, you know. So I was brought to these ladies, and I worked with them, and it was very fascinating. We actually got into unborn child and it was interesting. I can tell you a very short story, how I learned that you could talk to the unborn child. I was talking on a station. We were talking about a pregnant mother and everything. And the channel I was working said, do you want to talk to the unborn child? I said, what? She said, do you want to talk to the unborn child? What do you mean? I said, well, talk to the unborn child. I said, and me being Mr. Curiosity, I thought, okay, I'll talk to the unborn child. Let's see what you got. You know? And here comes this little voice. Hi, Dr. Cole. Anyway, I worked with several channels, and then I asked them, I said, where did you learn this? And they said, oh, well, this was from Reverend Beverly Birdie Carey taught them. And I thought, wow, if the students are that good, what do you think the teacher is like? So I got her phone number, and being a doctor, I thought, well, she'll be happy to work with me and everything. And this is kind of I have to tell a story about my ego a little bit at that time. I called her up and said, I'm Dr. Cole. I'd like to work with you, et cetera. And I expected her to just jump at the chance. And her answer was, well, I don't know. Let me think about it, and I'll call you back in 2 weeks. Well, I immediately tucked my tail between my legs, and we hung up, you know. Then about 15 minutes later, I get this phone call, and it's Reverend Birdie Carey. And she said, I've been told that I should work with you. So that started a 20-year relationship with her. And we've covered about every subject that you can think of. So so each tape that I did was just a fascinating learning experience. And I saw the value and the truth, and I could put this what I was taught to work in my life and my practice to see if it really works, and indeed it did. And so if you can work with someone for 20 years and they be consistent in what they teach, you can't making up these stories for 20 years and not get caught in the lies or something. So unfortunately, Beverly passed away probably 6-7 years ago, and I was really sorry to hear that. But that's kind of how I evolved through these meetings and these people, and that's what the evolvement is. It's a growth, and that's what we're all here on this earth to do, is to grow, get experiences, and become a better person. Through,
I agree.
Bottom line, is unconditional love.
Yeah.
You know, the book that you just came out with, which I highly recommend, and I know we'll be talking more about all the books, but you know, that I was really blown away by how, you know, when you talk about love, you know, some of the universal spiritual laws, of course, the first one is love, and one of the big ones is forgiveness. And I liked how you talked about both of those, love and forgiveness. You have to have self-love and self-forgiveness first as a foundation to work on. And that really impacted me, Dr. Cole. And I wanted to know if you could maybe just expound on that for our listeners, and how how you think about that, because I think that's so interesting.
Well, I think I have about 23 universal laws in there, and certainly forgiveness. Mm-hmm. The primary universal law, as you mentioned, that is the law of love. And if you just followed that and nothing else, you'd really kind of be following all the other laws. But forgiveness is a very, very important thing. And the sad thing is, do you know who the hardest one to forgive is?
Yourself?
You got it. You get an A+ on that. And like, for instance, let's talk about dogs. And by the way, you know what dog spelled backward is, don't you? G-O-D.
Oh,
you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
But you know, dogs can show unconditional love. And in my book, I talk about where you can see that unconditional love. You can have the most horrible person have a dog, and they'll love their owner just as much as they love the best person around, as long as it doesn't abuse them and everything here. So forgiveness is extremely important because, you know, by forgiving yourself, it gives you another chance. And again, that's part of the evolvement and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The forgiveness is an extremely one of the important laws. There's a lot of them that are very, very important, but forgiveness, and particularly of self and of others, normally it's you that suffers more from not forgiving yourself and certainly forgiving others than the person that you're should be forgiving and everything. And certainly there's a lot of things it would be pretty hard to try to forgive, but you know, love and forgiveness are just, you know, do go hand in hand, and you're right, you know. So and it's like the lady that she forgave herself, and what happened? The pain went away. So I think you make a good point that those two, well, I mean, they're all locked together, the laws, and based on primary universal law. I don't know if I answered the question, but if you have any other.
No, absolutely. No, you did well. I just think it's wonderful. Yeah, thank you.
You know, I know we're going to have you. In fact, we talked when we were prepping for this interview that we want to have you back on in a couple of weeks to talk about, you know, the universal spiritual laws of healing in a show just about your new book. But I want to know, when you're not writing, when you're not, you know, doing all these amazing things, what do you do in your spare time? I'm dying to know.
Well, I feel that we've been brought to a very special world here, and there's a lot of very special things to do. And I've done some things that have kind of are way fun to me, at least. To other people, they would not. But I've been a scuba diver since about 1959, and I've swam with humpback whales. I've swam with whale sharks. I've swam with manatees. I've been in caves and petted nurse sharks. When I was in high school, in college, I enjoyed football and played it, and artwork. I enjoy photography. I'm kind of a professional. No, I'm not a professional. I'm a photographer. Uh-huh. I enjoy animals. Been on a photographic safari, which is a wonderful trip to Africa and to Alaska. And done snow and water skiing, included barefoot skiing. And one thing I enjoyed the most, one of my hobbies, was skydiving. And I actually
always wanted to do that.
It's great for the people that can enjoy it. I actually organized and participated in an official world record skydive, which is actually it's in the 1987 Guinness Book of World Records. And we stacked 23 open parachutes together. I enjoyed motorcycle riding, and I had a recreational ranch in Texas. And so, you know, life in the earth is just full of beautiful and fun and exciting things to do, and I encourage people to enjoy them and everything here. It doesn't have to be what I did and everything. That was just my thing here. But so other than that, I haven't really done much in the last few years.
Now, Scott, I want to ask you, have you ever wanted to go skydiving, Scott?
You know, my daughter has done it, and she asked me if I'd be interested, and I told her, yeah, I'd like to go, but I have not done it, no. It looks fascinating. I do have a healthy fear of heights, but I assume that when you go up there, you're well taken care of and well instructed. So it is on my bucket list for sure. How about you?
I do. I have always wanted to go, so just haven't yet. On my bucket list as well.
It's well, fun. You can do tandem jumps, stuff like that. Yeah. But so I actually did one myself just to see what it was, because I thought sometime I might let my son go, that had spina bifida, which is like a paraplegic, but he never has. But it was, until you really get into free fall, though, you don't get the real fun of. But with the tandem jump, you are in free fall for a while. So yeah. I encourage you to follow your dream.
Okay, I'm on it.
Well, Dr. Cole, I think we better wrap it up for this show. But again, we really want to have you on and talk about all of your writings. And we do have a habit of putting all of the links on the on the landing page of our podcast. But if you wouldn't mind just kind of giving the listeners some ways to find you and how to look for your books, if they're excited about the talk, which they should be, how can we find you on the World Wide Web, so to speak?
Well, actually there is a website, but it's an old website, which has to do with the birthing. So, okay. To do with the birth and the birthing book, it's on, birthhealingandbeyond.com.
Okay.
So that's birthhealingandbeyond.com. And, that's a much younger me on there. So, keep that in mind and everything. I have another website, but I mean, it's just simply a website and everything here.
Okay.
I don't know. Should I give the website or what do you think here?
Absolutely.
Sure.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, go ahead. We can all, you know, and also, can we find your books on Amazon or where can, you know, where can, folks
right,
find your books?
Starting the publicity work on the new book, but it is listed mm-hmm. on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, and it's called Universal Spiritual Laws and Healing. And you can find them on there. We're working right now to create an audio book. I know a lot of people go for audio books versus the actual reading, so they can go to work listening to the book on the tape recorder or DV. And so they can find it on there. And so that's two ways. I think supposedly, I don't know whether the website that I gave you, it's supposed to turn over to my website, my okay. own email address and everything here.
Okay.
And okay. So as far as any more information about me, of course, my email address doesn't have any information or anything like that here.
Well, that's good. Well, I just want to say that your book was very impactful to me, and I think about it a lot, and I'm trying to incorporate things like this into my purely traditional Western practice, but I think it's so informative. And just thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it, Dr. Cole.
Well, I certainly appreciate you having me on the show, both of you, and you all are special people and are doing a real job to help your listeners, to say the least here. And I feel sorry for you, Dr. Clitheroe, that what you commented on earlier, that, I want to talk to my patients, but I started my practice before managed care started, and you can do what you mm-hmm. wanted to then. Now it's a whole different game. So I guess I got out in time here, but I feel sorry and feel your frustration, to say the least, and everything. So you made a good point.
Yeah, well, it makes for long hours, but it's worth it. It's the only way I could ever do it. I don't rush. I take my time with my patients, but I appreciate that.
Obviously, I can tell by talking to you, you're the type of doctor that I was and want to be and want to go to. Keep up the good work. Like you're doing a great job and have a great understanding and everything. And hopefully the book can help out, because like I say, we need the help of the patient to help heal them. And they
absolutely
don't understand how extremely important that is. So they come in and, of course, want you to do all the work and do a surgery, do medicine. But if they don't change their thinking, and that's the key, and beliefs, they can stay as sick as long as they want to. So
it's so true.
And so I can appreciate your situation.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, again, that wraps up the show for today, and we'll be right back after this important message.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
As we close this show, I want to put out a big heartfelt thanks to Dr. Ronald Cole. He has been such an inspiration to me, and I can't wait to have him back on our show to talk about his new book, called The Universal Spiritual Laws in Healing. So make sure you are all on the lookout for that upcoming show. If you enjoy listening to us at UpToMeRadio.com, then go to our A Healthier View show page to subscribe for updates, free gifts, sponsor promotions, and even more. Stay connected with us on Facebook and Instagram at UpToMeRadio. Podcasts can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts, just search for UpToMeRadio. Until next time, have a healthy day.